Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Cams here, the Unbeliever, joined as always by my good friend
Bodge, the Unbeliever. And yeah, I kind of don't know whether it's getting more believable or unbelievable by the day, but anyway. Yeah, well, I want to kind of correct something that I remember I'd said Jahannam. Oh, that sounds like the Arabic for heaven. It's actually the opposite. It's the Arabic for hell.
Oh, yeah, a simple mistake.
Yeah, well, I mean, and certainly after reading the chapter, you realize. But anyway.
Yeah. So, yes, it's chapter 9, Jahannam. So we left just as they were setting off with Covenant placing Treok's stone knife into his belt.
Yeah.
After the showdown, where the big reveal was given to Atiaran, Lena's mother, about what Covenant had done to Lena.
Yeah, and he was kind of oblivious to the situation because he was so kind of absorbed by the fact that he was getting feeling back in his fingers.
Yeah, exactly.
After all this time. And he even pretty much says, F this enterprise, you know, like, what's it to me? And she's having none of it. And she said, I'll drag you if I have to.
So. And yeah. She actually does do that in chapter 9.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so they're heading off on a bit of a long walk. Atiaran leading the way. Atiaran with her stiff back. That's described quite well.
Yeah. Keep moving or go mad. I mean, yeah, certainly, I guess certainly for her, like, you know, I mean, and I don't know, for him, for all of us at one time or another, I guess.
Aye. And he's feeling his nerves. He's feeling blisters on his feet. His toes were as alive as his fingers. So this is what's on his mind. He's not thinking about the showdown, about what he did to Lena, about his impotence. None of that. It's all about how he's healing. And he shouldn't be. This is a problem. Because he uses his survival tactics to help him to deal with his leprosy, which is incurable, except that now it seems to be getting better. And then at one point, they rest. He walks till his endurance gives out, and he remembers when he wakes up that when he went to sleep the night before, he didn't have a blanket on. And when he wakes up, he does. So it's clear that Atiaran is looking after him, despite how she feels about him.
Well, she's doing her duty. I mean, yeah, she seemingly kind of can't really stand him, and she keeps going. She doesn't make allowances for, you know, his tiredness and his bodily state or whatever, such as she maybe understands his condition. But yeah, she cooks him food, and she bandages his hand.
Yeah, puts a blanket on him overnight, and then marches off again as they head through the land. And we're given a description of the springtime. So that tells us that the land has seasons. I'm not sure that that's ever come up before. So the world building continues. We know that the land has seasons.
Earlier on, he's still very angry. I mean, that anger still comes up, and it comes up in this case as a result of his sense of healing. And he gets pissed off, doesn't he? Because is wondering about, like, sanity and insanity and what's reality and was he ever a leper and, like, is he going crazy and what's going on? So this kind of pisses him off.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is this? Is this a temporary thing? Am I going to go back? And alongside that, there's also a sense of evil and danger. We're just, as they set off, this is a couple of pages down. This is just it's just her that senses something. Her unexpected anxiety. But, yeah, he's focused on his improving condition. Inexplicably improving condition.
Yeah. There's a bit here I've underlined which backs up what you said about his anger. It says the immediacy of these inexplicable sensations began to infuriate him.
Yeah.
They were evidence of health, vitality, a wholeness he had spent long, miserable months of his life learning to live without. And they seemed to inundate him with terrifying implications. They seemed to deny the reality of his disease. But that was impossible. Any belief was better than that, better to struggle for a sanity he could at least recognise than to submit to a health which surpassed all explanation. So yeah, as you said, there's anger and there's insanity. Now we've got the section here where Atiaran senses something evil and Covenant clocks that and asks if she thinks they're being followed again, but she doesn't answer. She just wishes that Trail were here. Trail, her husband. He would understand better why the land is so unquiet. And then they carry on. Until we get to the first waymeet.
Yeah, this is an interesting little place.
It makes me think of the bothies that you get in Scotland.
Exactly.
In the countryside.
Yeah. That's exactly the thought I had. Yeah. And they're wonderful places to stay in, the bothies.
Aye.
Just, you know, all over. And often you will find, okay, not fresh food, but, you know, people have left extra stuff and there might be an axe or a saw or something that you can go and chop wood with.
Yeah.
But shelter anyway for wayfarers.
Yeah. And we get an explanation of who cares for them, the Wainhim. And this is a bit of a description of some of the history, going back to the Demondum spawn, of which I believe there are two kinds. We've got the Urviles and we've got the Wainhim. And they were all spawn of the Demondum, or Demondum, however you pronounce that. And it says that the Wainhim asked the lords to give them a service to perform as expiation for the sins of their kindred. So we're not really told what the sins of their kindred were. I presume that will come up at some point. And they do it to perform simple tasks to redeem the evil of their mighty lore. So I've written, what evil? So we're getting little tidbits here of some more of the history of the land and some of its inhabitants. But the Wainhim will leave these waymeets for weary travellers with a comfortable place to sleep and some food to stock up, some shelter.
And what a delightful place. I mean, they actually visit two of them. Okay, later on, the other one isn't as a pleasant a visit. But,
no.
But over here, I mean, what a delightful place. You know, kind of the trees, it's like hidden, you can't see it, you have to kind of know that it's there, and then it just opens up into this kind of natural little rest house.
Yeah, yeah, great little places. And they're built to enable travellers who want to go to and from Revelstone.
Right, to encourage... Yeah, to encourage people to kind of go about visiting each other.
Yeah. So they have a night in the Wain, the Waymeet, and then they head off. When they get up in the morning, the weather changes, and we have a storm which seems to be an unnatural storm. And Atiyaran believes that it's caused by the Staff of Law, which, you remember, Drool Rockworm has in his possession. So this could be him experimenting with the Staff of Law.
Well, that's right, because she says it's not the regular kind of rain. It's rain that comes from the north, which we don't get, and the spring rain is from the southwest. And she says, no, this rain comes straight from Graventhrendo, the cave white staff wrong wielder tests his power, I feel it.
Yeah. Oh, aye, before that, when we're in the Waymeet, Covenant goes through his shaving ritual with Tree Ox knife, and he manages to shave cleanly without any soap. The knife is razor sharp. So I suppose it's interesting that he's using the tool that belonged to the guy that tried to kill him.
Yeah.
To enact his ritual of survival.
It does a fair job.
Yeah. There's a little prayer of thanks given to the Wainhim for the gift of the Waymeet. Nice little ritual from Atiyaran. So then we got the storm. And that's when Covenant wants to stop. Atiyaran refuses to stop. And Covenant ends up flipping and falling in the mud. And she grabs him by the arm and drags him before he gets a chance to find his feet. But then he does, he gets up. And that's when there's a huge white flash explodes. When he felt that a bolt of lightning had struck his left hand. So it's not clear that it's the ring, but we're kind of, you know, we can assume that it is.
What he does say is hellfire at the just before the lightning bolt strikes. So there's potential causality.
Yeah, he says hellfire all the time.
I know, but yeah, right. I don't know.
When I was asking someone on a forum for any ideas of what we could name this podcast, one of the ideas that I got was hellfire. But yeah, it doesn't mention the ring here. It just mentions that there's a bolt of lightning that strikes his left hand. And that leads Atiyaran to believe that he's done something. And he has to disavow her of that notion. He says, I don't control the weather.
And he's aware that something has changed. An awareness which slowly kind of grows on him. But straight after being struck, he was numbly aware that something had changed. Mm. But in his confusion, he could not identify it.
So at this point, this is when the transformation of his health sense starts to happen. So the evil storm seems to have been turned by this lightning bolt. And then he starts to feel the growth of the land around him.
Hmm.
He can sense the earth, and he can sense the plants and the alliantha, the sustenance that they offer. And then at that point I thought to myself, yeah, this is a callback to when Atiyaran said to him, I cannot see you, I can't read you, or something like that. And I made a note.
You are close to me.
Yeah, and then later on, the callback's there for us in the next paragraph. So I was like, that's a nice little touch, because it's an easy thing to have forgotten. So it's nice that the author included that for us.
Yeah, so I mean, whatever the transformation, it kind of raises his vision somewhat. Maybe even his I don't know, senses.
Yeah.
Because he really does seem to be looking at everything with fresh eyes. And before, he was close to the beauty of the place, even when it was described by the author. Here he's kind of alive to it.
Yeah. He's sensing its vitality, and he'd never noticed it before. So yeah, it's like fresh eyes, as you say. His senses had gained a new dimension. And then he mentions his leprosy, and he says, "By hell," he mumbled, "is my leprosy this obvious to her? Then why doesn't she understand?" And then it cuts off, and that's when we get the call back a little later on, and he comes to understand that no, she couldn't tell about his leprosy because she couldn't see him, she couldn't read him. And he feels some sense of relief at that. He feels that the privacy of his leprosy is still intact.
Right.
That's what it says. So he doesn't want to be read. He likes to be closed. Makes him feel safe.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's an interesting thing you bring up. I mean, yeah. I wonder how you apply that to yourself. Huh?
Good question.
But yeah, I mean, I did. I've written down here LSD, and I put a smiley face, you know, the colours, kind of, and that kind of sense, you know. But yeah, it says he was seeing health, smelling natural fitness and vitality, hearing the true exuberance of spring. And, yeah, health was as vivid around him as if the spirit of the land's life had become palpable. So, I mean, that contrasts, yeah, totally with the kind of postponement of death that he was kind of living as, you know, a leper.
Yeah. And he can now sense the wrongness that Ati Aran mentioned earlier that he couldn't sense before. He starts to understand now. He says, twice more his nostrils had caught the elusive odour of wrongness.
Yeah. And it's interesting that it's his sense of smell. Because, I mean, apparently we do take in, like, what, I don't know, a huge amount, majority, I think, of our information through a sense of smell.
Interesting, yeah.
Subconsciously, yeah.
So he asks Ati Aran, "Do you smell it?" And she says, "Yes, unbeliever, I smell it. It becomes clear to me. It means that we are walking into peril." Thinking hellfire, Covenant rephrased his question. So they don't know what's causing this feeling of wrongness. Ati Aran says, "It is murder."
Yeah.
And this is before they discover that that is in fact what it is.
Right, and just as Thomas Covenant is kind of discovering the sense of smell, they have a interesting little interaction where she wonders that he shouldn't be able to sense health, right?
Yeah.
And that it, that and she looks at him and she says, "Then how does the world from which you come live?"
Yeah.
She sounded dismayed by the prospect of a place in which health itself was invisible. I mean, yeah, right.
Aye.
When was this written? 77. Yeah, fast forward half a century and wahey. I mean, nothing has changed.
No, no.
Right, but they're sensing that they're walking into peril and that this thing that they are sensing is evil and murderous, right?
Yep, yep.
And then she kind of tenses up when she kind of rounds a corner and she gets a view of a valley. Right?
Yeah.
Is that where we are?
Yeah. Yep. And we're heading towards another way meet. So
yeah.
This is the third one that they've been to. So we got a description of the way meet the first time. The second time it was just an overnighter. We didn't get much more description. On this third occasion, Ati Aran goes in first and she says, "It's a Wainham." So we were told earlier that the Wainham don't make themselves known to other inhabitants of the land. But we get to see one. We get to see a dead Wainham that's been pinned to the floor with a spike.
Yeah. The corpse in the cups.
Exactly, yeah.
And they don't have eyes. That's what struck me.
They've got big nostrils. So there's the smelling again that you mentioned.
Right, yeah.
Pointed ears, long torsos, and this one's dead, pinned to the floor. And at first Covenant senses the wrongness and he thinks it might be the creature, but then he comes to understand that it's not the creature, it's the murder, it's the spike.
And this sense had been building until it was almost unbearable the closer they got to this this place.
Yeah.
So they, yeah, right, so they just want to get the hell out of there then.
Yeah, Covenant questions Atia and says, should we not have buried it? She replies, no, they will look after themselves.
Hmm.
The other way and him will see to it.
She is concerned, though. She's concerned that this might lead them to break the agreement, the covenant, or whatever it is.
Mm.
And so clearly, I mean, violence is unknown in the land.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, violence, deceit, you know, underhand, undermining.
That all comes from the despiser. So we learn a bit about that later, but before we get there, it says that they're going to have to travel in the same direction that the killer of the Wainham had taken. So I suppose they must be able to sense that somehow.
Yeah, right. I'd wondered, like, how do they know?
Yeah. Well, it's the narrator who tells us that.
Right. And maybe, well, I guess if it's linked to the storm from the north, and they are travelling north.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Mm. Yeah. This is the first time Covenant's allowed himself for days to think of Drool and Lord Fowl. He knew that either of them was capable of killing a Wainham. And even the despiser at least might know where he was. Well, yeah, I mean, the despiser is the one who gave him his task. So he knows where he's going.
Lord Fowl is the despiser, right?
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. Also known as the Grey Slayer.
And not known as Lord Bane.
Not by anyone but you, Barge. So the day passed without mishap. They carry on their long walk through the land until they come upon Soaring Wood Helven.
Yes, fantastic sounding place.
Mm. So this is the wood people, basically, where Ati Arryn and her family, they are the stone people.
Yeah.
So the lore of the wood Helvenin is called the Lilianril, which is the wood counterpart to the Radhamel, which is stone lore. So I've written down here, it's very dwarves and elves. So it seems a bit kind of fantasy derivative in a way. It's like we've come to the Council of Elrond, for those that have read Lord of the Rings.
Not I.
Not you.
Yeah, and to the Radamarel for truth and the Lilianril for counsel, is an ancient saying.
Which is
in this
exactly
land.
What happens when they get to Elrond's council. Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
anyway,
I see.
Anyway.
I see. Right. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, this is like a tree village, huh? So the tree is like 400 feet tall.
Yeah.
And they get there and they find a gate and nobody about, and she's puzzled because she's been there before and it's not been like that, and there've been like children's voices and things and now it's silence. So what's going on?
And hospitality and the welcome of strangers, that all seems to have gone by the wayside, much to her surprise. And she shouts out, "Woodhull Venin, what gives? I have been here before. In those early days, it was said that the Woodhull Venin hospitality had no equal. Is this your friendship to the land?" So Covenant gets yanked up the tree with a rope around his wrists after he makes it known that he doesn't climb well. He's afraid of heights.
Well, I mean, so what happens is, so they don't, there's nobody about. And then all of a sudden, these like seven or eight folk with sharp wooden daggers appear. And they want to know who, well, they want to be sure. So basically, Atiaran says, you know, like, what's going on? I'm from here. I'm from the land and, you know, hospitality and all that. And they say, well, look, you guys don't know what we've experienced, so we have to check you out. And after that, we'll apologize for being rude.
That's right. Well said.
In terms of, yeah, so then they take them up, and Thomas Covenant is like freaked out by heights and dark, and he's just not having it. And then they say, okay, fine, you're not going to climb, then we've got another way. And then he finds himself being hauled up.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that, you know, the fact that he can take this is also an indication of his healing, because it's the leper state, like his hands would fall off. Practically. I mean.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this also must be a further indication of his increasing strength. Intentional or not by the author, but it seems to be the case. But anyway, they get to this kind of high up level, right, in the tree.
Yeah, and his arms have gone dead. He checks his wrists for abrasions and there's no broken skin. But his arms are numb. And then his feeling starts to return. So we get a description of that.
Yeah, and then, so Atiaran, she comes up the other way. She appears, she looks a bit kind of, I don't know, down in the dumps. And they're in this kind of chamber, which is, it sounds fantastic, in the middle of the tree, right? And you've got the rings of the tree going round, and it's all kind of nicely polished. And then the ceiling, which is way up, is the original wood.
Yeah. And they're surrounded by five Woodhull Venin, one of whom is the chief. I forget what he's called.
Or is that the guy with the leaves around his head? They don't actually say chief, but it kind of, I thought maybe, yeah.
Yeah, he has a name. I think it's like the Ebrand or something. I've forgotten the actual title. Something with brand in it. But yeah, so they have a bit of a discussion, and Atiaran gets an explanation as to why they're being tested and why the trust of the land has been put on hold until they can determine whether these two travellers are legit.
Right, and also they discover that, well, Atiaran asks about scouts, because it's like, why do we even need scouts in this land?
Mm.
You know, what's going on?
Yeah. Ah, so here we are. Baradak is the higher brand of the Lilianril, the man with the circlet of leaves.
Right.
So we get an explanation about how they were recently visited by another traveller. And this traveller they did give the usual hospitality to.
Mm. Except it was Mr. Hell.
It was one of the ravers. It says, "I will tell you, all servants of the Grey Slayer are not dead. It is our belief that a raver has been among us." That name carried a pang of danger that made Covenant look rapidly about him, trying to locate the peril. So we've had a description briefly of what the ravers are. They are shapeless servants of Lord Fowl who don't have their own bodies. They take
and
over.
Dance to music and take drugs.
Exactly. In secret locations. So yeah, that gave us a lot of amusement as young 20-year-olds in the 90s. So yeah, this raver comes among them, and his name is Jehanam, and he gives them evil prophecy, and they test him with the highwood, the lomilialor.
He also seems to spread some kind of poison. He passed amongst us with dark hints and spite in his mouth, casting sly ridicule on our crafts and customs.
That's a good section. That's like when the despiser managed to sneak his way into the Council of Lords.
Exactly. The Trojan horse.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So
spreading lies and propaganda.
And we could not answer him, but we remembered peace and did nothing for a day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and this is within the last few days. So it's not like this happened before Thomas Covenant's arrival. So, I mean, as far as I can tell, all the heavy stuff that's happening in this land now, this time round anyway, seems to have, or at least seems to be starting after Thomas Covenant arrived.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, and just kind of that sense that the land was getting sick and he was getting better, that, you know, that kind of went away a little bit when he started, like, looking at the land with his LSD eyes and kind of seeing how nice it was and all that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so here is Mr. Hell spreading his hellish vibes.
Yeah, and we get a description of the lomilialor, which is the Woodhulvenin equivalent of the Orcrest from the Radhamerl, to throw in lots of vocabulary. So this wood that they use to test Covenant is an offspring of the one tree from which the Staff of Law itself was made.
Yeah, right.
So we didn't really get much of a description of what the Orcrest can do from the Stone Downers. But it's a similar kind of strength of magic that these two different, what are they, races? Or I suppose they're races, aren't they? They have their own magic tools. One has stone, one has wood. So the Orcrest versus the Lomilialor, they're equal in power, I would say. And so when Jehanam saw the highwood, he sprang away and escaped. So that gives a sense that the raver's afraid of this magic.
Yeah, right. Right, like garlic to a vampire kind of thing, huh?
Mm. And his fleetness surpassed ours. He eluded us and he made his way toward the east. And in the one day which has passed since that time, we have been relearning the defence of the land. So yeah, it's been a very short time.
They do also refer to the pause in the storm, which they thought maybe meant a good omen.
Yeah.
2 days earlier, the last ill storm out of Mount Thunder had broken suddenly and turned into good. And on the day the stranger came, our hearts were glad, thinking that a battle we knew not of had been won for the land. So they initially thought he was maybe a good omen.
Right, because it happened presumably around the time Covenant's ring flashed. And
exactly. And if that caused the lull in the storm, then Jehanam's kind of appearance was just kind of, just appeared to be linked to it.
Yeah, they jumped to conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Atiaran says, Melancurion. At this, a murmur of relief passed among the hearers.
Hmm.
So this word has some kind of gravitas. You have spoken a name which no raver would call upon to save a companion.
Because they also say, we see much in you, Atiaran.
Mm.
But your companion is close to us. So yeah. He's close to them too.
So I wonder whether covenant would start to open up to the inhabitants of the land as his own health sense starts to build. I suppose we'll find that out.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, at what stage does anyone start to open up? It's when they have their basics attended to, right? So, you know, feel secure, feel comfortable, don't feel threatened. Yeah. I guess if he's healing, then he's also maybe getting more comfortable and more open, and his senses seem to be kind of developing in funny ways.
So we're told that Jehanan predicted many things, one of which is that a great evil in the semblance of Beric Halfhand walked the hills towards us out of the south, and that he would have a ring of white gold.
Yeah.
So Jehanan obviously knows Covenant's on his way, and he's trying to undermine him before he reaches any other inhabitants. Even though the Raver's a servant of Lord Fowl, and Lord Fowl's the one who gave Covenant the task. So maybe the Raver's acting on his own agency here. But he must have the information from Lord Fowl of who Covenant is. So, yeah, I wonder what his deal is.
But also is an indication of how potentially powerful Thomas Covenant could be, at least in their eyes. I mean, it's like the censors, right? You know, I mean, you know, it's only when you're over the target that you get flack. So, yeah. I mean, he's obviously, that wild magic is obviously really up to something big. And a lot more people seem to have a sense of what it might be than old Thomas Covenant.
But I think, yeah, it's the paradox of Covenant. We've had this discussion before where they talked of how you could save or damn the land. And this white gold is a substance that comes not from within the land. So the inhabitants of the land, for them it could swing either way. But they choose to assist him anyway with his quest. And he doesn't know himself, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem to be in the nature of the land to, yeah, let things take their path. But, yeah, there's a dramatic end to this chapter.
Yeah, well, they throw the stick at him.
Yeah.
He tries to catch it with his bad hand. Of course he's going to have trouble with that.
Yeah.
Now, they take that as a sign that he's been rejected, whereas you could read it simply as a man with half a hand trying to catch a stick. I mean, I would struggle with that with a full hand.
Right, but then, I mean, with magic, you know, the stick would stick. Yeah. But I mean, it's a big moment because everyone is kind of frozen. Because I don't know, whatever it is, there is the sense of the Beric Halfhand type persona, right? Yeah, this seems to kind of negate that in some way.
Yeah, but if the Raver's spreading this bad information, you think back to when Covenant appeared, first of all to Lena. She already knew the prophecy of Beric Halfhand. When they take him to Mythil Stone Down, other people in the Stone Down have heard the prophecy. I would assume at least Baradakis, the heed punter of the wood people, would have known before the Raver arrived about this prophecy. So when the Raver turns up and says, yeah, the prophecy's come true, look out for Beric Halfhand, you'd think they'd be sceptical at the Raver's information.
But at that stage, they were still open. I mean, it seems, you know, so...
When the raver turned up?
Yeah, and this land doesn't seem to have had much of a need for skepticism.
True. But the raver's message was to beware of Beric Halfhand's second coming, because he was on his way, basically. He's coming from the south. So the wood people must have thought, well, we know this prophecy. Who's this guy that's trying to tell us that it's come true and that that's a bad thing?
Yeah, right, because in the prophecy he's going to come and kind of save things, right? So it's going to be a good thing.
Yeah, but also there's really nothing up until this point for him to save, because the land has been in a time of peace. So why would the saviour appear to save them if they didn't need saving? So maybe that's what it is. The raver's trying to indicate to the people of the land that the coming of Beric Halfhand is a bad thing. It's a sign that things are about to get bad.
Does the raver say that Beric Halfhand is coming, or that a Beric Halfhand figure is coming? He said that a great evil in the semblance of Beric Halfhand.
Yeah, okay.
He doesn't say Beric Halfhand. I mean, of course, that could mean, exactly, that in the semblance of Beric Halfhand, as in no other than Beric Halfhand. That could also be understood to be the meaning of that, but, I mean, not necessarily.
No.
But hey, I mean, you know, I'm still swimming in the dark because I haven't read it 50 million times like you have, you know.
So, yeah, that's where we leave it. Covenant has been rejected by the Highwood. He is wrong in the land. So we'll find out what that means next time in Chapter 10, The Celebration of Spring.
For what it's worth, I was thinking about why I thought he was a bit funny about his sense of being mad. Because if he finds that this is reality and that he never used to be a leper and that it's all in his head, I mean, I don't know. Why is that mad? Why is that mad? Why is that insane? My understanding of insanity is, it's, I don't know, yeah, complete confusion. I mean, maybe that is what he intends.
Well, he has a disease that is incurable and will ultimately kill him. And now he's being cured of it while he's in a delusional state.
I see. So this is like then the exact inverse, because he's getting to that state that he wanted to get to, i.e. healing, but in a dream and not in reality.
Exactly. Therefore, he must be detached from sanity.
Yeah.
For that to be in his mind as a possibility, even.
Because he says it has to be one or the other.
Yeah. Either he's divorced or... What did it say? Either I'm divorced or Joan... Can't remember how he put it. Something to do with his divorce.
Right. Well, she still seems to be a kind of sore point for him.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, so... another chapter next week, just one?
Yeah, it's about 25 pages or so.
Right, you said they get longer and longer, don't they?
Oh. Well, say, not in this book so much as in the later ones, but I think perhaps, yeah. I'm not sure actually how much bigger the chapters get in this one. But I think a single chapter as we go, it's quite a fast-moving book. We tend to get quite a lot happening in each chapter. There's plenty to discuss.
Cool, sounds good.
Yeah. So if you've been reading along with us, thank you. Be interested to know what your thoughts are. I'm interested to know from you, Barge, what your thoughts are so far.
I'm still interested and see how it goes, where it's going. There's a lot, there, you know. There's kind of big chunks. But I guess as I get a bit more familiar, you know, I can always ask you for explanations, and that'll be good.
And a challenge for me to give you explanations without revealing any knowledge that you shouldn't have yet.
Yeah, right.
That you haven't earned.
Well, yeah.
We have to uncover.
Haven't slugged for.
We have to uncover Kevin's wards a bit at a time.
Right. Okay.
Excellent. Well, thanks for listening, folks. Been a pleasure to have you with us.
And we'll see you again. Until the next time.
Next week.
Bye now.
Bye.